Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dovere.
Being a bad chairman is one thing, okay? Paul's a bad person.
Today's guests, Corey Lewandowski and David Bossi, the Trump advisors who are the authors of the new book, Let Trump Be Trump. It's a weird thing in Washington. It really is true, though Donald Trump is the president, you don't find too many people who think, without a doubt, he's the best. That, of course, doesn't reflect where a lot of the people who voted for him are, but the conversations among senators, representatives, operatives, aides, this goes for Republicans and Democrats alike, that I'm having and that other people I know are having all the time are full of, at best, doubts, but that often turn to outright rage or mockery. And again, that's not just Democrats. Sometimes it comes out in the open, like we've seen with Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, the retiring senators. Most of the time, still, it's in off-the-record conversations that I and other reporters are having, or often that we're hearing about from others. Lewandowski, who was Trump's first campaign manager, and Bossi, who was the deputy campaign manager brought in later, are different. They love Trump. And maybe more importantly, they're in awe of him, or at least put on a good show of it, which is even more distinctive given that Trump fired Lewandowski and has brought neither of them in to work for him at the White House. And that's why with their new book coming out this week, again, it's called Let Trump Be Trump, though Lewandowski told me he didn't realize that came from the old West Wing line of Let Bartlett Be Bartlett. I thought we should have these guys on to talk about their insider account and their sense of where that puts this presidency. Of course, insider might be stretching it a bit. They both signed non-disclosure agreements, and they say that the book doesn't violate them. So take that all with a grain of salt. And people have already challenged certain parts of the book that have been out there for accuracy. But when you talk to people about this, it is a book that is maybe not true sentence by sentence or could be challenged sentence by sentence, but does seem to get at an essential truth or truths about Trump and about the people who are around him. And there are moments of note in there, like when they have Trump saying during the arguments internally about what to do in response to the Access Hollywood tape last fall, he says, according to Bossi, first of all, I'm going to win. And second, if the Republican Party is going to run away from me, then I will take you all down with me. But I'm not going to lose. Or this one from a phone conversation between Lewandowski and Trump during the transition, when the then president-elect is thinking back to how bare bones their initial operation was. And Lewandowski brings up Hope Hicks, who had been an advisor through the campaign and is now the White House communications director. According to Lewandowski, Trump says, yeah, but she had as much experience as a coffee cup. And Lewandowski says, but she's good looking. And Trump says, that always helps. For the story that's up on our website about this, I reached out to the White House and asked them what they thought about these statements, whether they agree that these are accurate representations of the president and what he said, and how the president feels about the two of them writing this book despite those non-disclosure agreements. So check that story out up on the website. But first, you'll hear us sitting around the dining room table in the Capitol Hill townhouse that's now Lewandowski's home base of operations, with their take on the president and the complaints about him. And you'll hear what they say when I challenge them on parts. Like when Bossi insisted that nothing that's going on in the fight against Trump is anywhere near what happened when people were fighting against Obama. Or when he claimed that there have been riots protesting Trump. Remember to subscribe and rate Off Message on iTunes and Stitcher or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. Coming up, David Petraeus, which is a conversation that will definitely be interesting in this moment. Like me on Facebook and on Twitter at Isaac Dovere, and email me your thoughts and suggestions at isaac@politico.com. But let's kick things off by checking in with Eliana Johnson, White House reporter here at Politico, joining us back again to talk about how this all fits together within the Trump orbit. Let's start with, can you help explain what role these two guys play within the Trump orbit, how they fit in? Are they respected? Are they still insiders? They're not working in the White House.
Yeah, they play an interesting role. And in many ways, I think they embody a key quality of Trump in that they were both, Corey Lewandowski was Trump's first campaign manager and David Bossi was his deputy campaign manager. And they both embody, because neither of them work in the White House, how quickly Trump churns through staff. So they were neither of them was extended a position in the White House when Trump went into the White House. And yet He's been very reluctant to actually let them go. And so several...
I still talk to him all the time.
That's right. At several points during the administration, we've seen them get off Air Force One with him. He's still in close contact with them and still falls back on them in times of stress and calls on them for advice. So I do think they embody really his... you know, people talk about Trump as valuing loyalty. He's really not a tremendously loyal person. He's willing to discard people when they're no longer working for him. And yet he really doesn't like to let people go or fire them. So often he'll get rid of people and yet continue to talk to them all the time, as he does with both of these guys.
And with Steve Bannon, too. I mean, nobody...
That's right.
It's Hotel California,
that's right?
Right? And Lewandowski said to me that he had just come from a meeting with Mark Short, the legislative affairs director of the White House. So it's not just talking to the president. They're talking to people.
Yeah, they're very much still in the mix in terms of the president's political strategy. I mean, they're not integral to crafting the tax bill or anything like that. But in terms of the president's day-to-day thing, I mean, the president isn't integral in terms of writing the tax bill either. But in terms of his political outlook and the people he falls back on in terms of chatting with day to day.
And what is his political strategy at this point, the president's political strategy? It seems like there was a comment that he made early out in the presidency. It was February, where he said, life is a campaign. And he seems to have really held to that as president. He likes being in that mode of being on the attack. There was a response to Flynn was to pivot into the attack. It seems like as he gets into 2018, he'll be out on the campaign trail to the extent that people want him, but will certainly be tweeting and flinging around whatever political weight he has.
Yeah, I think Trump thrives when he's in opposition to somebody or something. And so you saw him deploy all these names when he was in the Republican primary, Little Marco and Lion Ted and then Crooked Hillary, and we saw him.
There's a line in the book where they write that this was actually Trump keying into Jungian archetypes. That's what Little Marco was from and Crooked Hillary too. It's that Bannon realized this at some point and told them that. So it gives you a sense of how that book reads.
I think that might be reading a little too much into what. Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that too. But he did that with Elizabeth Warren last week when you saw him call her Pocahontas. But I think he seems to thrive when he is squaring off against somebody else and seems to struggle a little bit when he's center stage trying to sell something in a positive way. But I actually, the book itself, I think, gives a pretty accurate portrayal of Trump in the campaign in the sense that in the very beginning, Dave Bossy writes that when Trump won, he says, "Dave, can you believe this? We just started this to have some fun."
Right.
And I do think that's a pretty accurate window into Trump's mindset and something that we really haven't heard. There's been rumors about it, but there are windows, I think, that we haven't gotten before into Trump's mindset. The one thing I would say, and it gets into that Jungian archetype thing, is that Bossy and Lewandowski often say things that could be interpreted as very negative about the president, but then try to spin them as positive traits, since these guys are still on good terms with the president. Like, they talk about his angry rages and how they can really, he tore their faces off. But then they say that he only does these things because he is so attentive to detail and exacting and such
so
a brilliant
much.
Boss. I mean, they give kind of absurd, explanations of his behavior. That being said, the explanations of his behavior do seem to be accurate. And for people looking to read a book about what sort of a guy Donald Trump is and how his campaign unfolded, I actually think they give a pretty accurate portrayal.
So last thing here, there is a moment in the book where they talk about the Access Hollywood weekend last year, and Trump says to Reince Priebus, "If the Republican Party runs away from me, I'll take you all down with me." What is the level of commitment you think Donald Trump has to the Republican Party?
I think he has zero commitment to the Republican Party. And you see him when he feels – I think he feels the Republican Party should have loyalty to him, but he has no commitment to the party. And so when he felt failed by Mitch McConnell on health care because the bill didn't pass, and then you saw a series of tweets from him – inveighing against McConnell for not having a bill ready to land on his desk. But you don't see any loyalty on his part in return or any sort of deference to the decisions of the party in terms of who should be a candidate or any I don't think he feels any responsibility to be the leader of the party in the sense that previous presidents have felt he didn't want to weigh in the Alabama Senate race ongoing right now to weigh in as sort of the moral conscience of the party. He doesn't want the responsibilities of party leadership. He doesn't feel responsibility to the party. And yet he does feel that he and in some sense he's right that he does have the loyalty of Republican voters, but he certainly feels he's owed the loyalty of Republican leaders in Congress and, you know, Republican members in Congress.
All right, let's hear Corey Lewandowski and David Bossie tell it for themselves. Eliana Johnson, thank you for taking a little time.
Thanks.
The first question that I guess I thought of when I knew that this book existed was, didn't everybody on the campaign have NDAs? How did you write this book?
We wrote the book by putting pen to paper.
Did you have an NDA?
Everybody has an NDA,
sure.
Right? But this has nothing to do with that. What this is the story of Donald Trump. This book talks about the phenomenon of a candidate who had never run for office before, what he saw, his messaging, the small role Dave and Corey played in it, helping him take over the country in such a positive way, and it's a movement. So it's special. There's nothing in there that...
Well, but it's an insider's account, but there's stuff you didn't disclose, right? Because you had an NDA too, right?
Of course, everyone did.
No, there's not. Look, there's nothing...
I'm just wondering how you thread that needle.
Look, I don't think there's a needle to thread, right? We tell the story of the rise of what I think is the greatest political story of our lifetime. The first time in modern history you have a person who's never served in any government capacity, never run for office, modern history, runs for office, beats an amazing field of qualified candidates in the primary, decimates the Democrat in states that Republicans hadn't won in 30 years. That's what the story's about. That's what it's all about. That's the inside story.
The title is Let Trump Be Trump. That's, you had that on your whiteboard in the campaign office. That comes from The West Wing, right? Let Bartlett be Bartlett.
I don't know. I've never
seen
that show.
Really?
I don't know what that is.
Where did you think it came from? It just came into your head, Let Trump Be Trump?
That was my, on the campaign.
It was the only way to allow yourself to be a part of that, because Donald Trump was bigger than anything that had to do with this campaign. When he took over and beat Hillary Clinton, it was all because of him. We were just a small part of that machine. And it's really, we're two blessed, lucky guys to be able to participate in this incredible ride that he took us on.
So who stops Trump from being Trump?
No, it's not. Look, here's what the book talks about. It's very important to know what the book talks about, right? Let Trump be Trump, because when you look at it, when you're a political operative, right, what most people do is they want to meld a candidate to what they think the American people want. And what I wanted to do and what Dave wanted to do is we saw the success that Donald Trump has had in his entire life. Real estate, books, television, whatever he has touched has turned to gold. And it was never our job or intention to change the candidate.
Right, but other people...
Other people have tried to do that.
Who is?
Look, the most famous part, it's in the book, but if you remember, there was a time when there was a campaign transition and Paul Manafort came in, he went down to Florida and he spoke to the Republican National Committee. He said, look, you're going to see a different Donald Trump. This is not going to be the same way it's always been. I, as the first campaign manager, and Dave, who helped win the campaign, didn't think we need to change Trump because we knew he was going to be successful. The American people love his authenticity and his genuine appeal. So you have to let Trump be Trump.
Are there people who are not letting the president be the president now? Letting Trump be Trump now?
No, I don't think so. We don't talk about it, but if you look at what General Kelly is doing, General Kelly's been very clear. He's the chief of the staff. He's not the chief of the president. He doesn't dictate to the president what he can and cannot do. He oversees the staff. That is a very important function. That's what helps the president to be successful.
And as you see in this book, this is the campaign book.
Right.
We touch very little on the ongoing right. White House. So you read the book about the campaign. People shouldn't pick up this book to think that they are getting the inside story of what's going on in the White House.
No, it basically stops on election night. There's a little bit more, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we wanted to do. It's the beginning to the end of the campaign.
But Corey, do you think that General Kelly is doing a good job?
Well, I think General Kelly has done an amazing job of bringing the White House order, which I think was very needed. But look, I think you have to remember, you have a different kind of president, an unconventional president, one who is engaged on so many issues, right? We know this president is fighting for healthcare. We know that he's talking about immigration. That's what he does, right? And helping to bring the right team together is what General Kelly has done, bring that team in to make the president be successful. And what I think we're going to see in a very short order is a success on this tax bill that the president has been pushing very hard.
There's a point in the book where you talk about the weekend of the Access Hollywood tape and the meeting that I guess you were part of, but Corey, you were not part of. You were over at CNN still then.
Sorry about that, Corey.
When the inner circle is meeting about it, and Priebus said what we soon found out that he said, which was, you're either going to lose in a massive landslide or you should drop out and let somebody else take the nomination. Mm-hmm. And you quote Donald Trump as saying, if the Republican Party is going to run away from me, then I will take you all down with me, but I'm not going to lose. Is that a wider statement? Is that the way that he thinks about his relationship to the Republican Party?
You have to understand that this is a incredibly stress-filled day, obviously.
Of course.
It was very stressful for all of the staff, but now the president, then the candidate,
right.
Was just as a matter of fact as he could be. He was amazing to be around, and certainly Reince said it, but as I say in the book,
yeah, it was a feeling that other people sort of had.
Look,
right?
When you were having,
and by the way, not just in the inner circle, right?
No, like, of course, well, yeah. Yes, Reince was articulating what you know many of the donor class, the establishment class, the political class in Washington believed was the absolute right answer. The only way it could go was he had. Well, guess what? We had other ideas, and no matter how much amongst the senior staff there was any type of reticence. When you were in the room with Donald Trump and he said, we are going to win. If people are going to be weak, I can't stop that.
Not what you have him saying. You say,
no, but that's right. A reflection of you guys are going to get weak and right. run away, I'm not going to be able, you know, that's just the way it goes.
I mean, I will take you down with me is what you
call it. Well, but look, that's him saying back to Reince when Reince says something, you know, fairly dramatic.
As the RNC chairman.
As the RNC chairman, you have to have a response. I love that response. I think that was a response that was necessary at that time. And Reince, what Reince did, the real story, in my opinion, is what then the candidate, but now the president did from that moment on.
Yeah.
Because this issue was litigated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from that weekend through Election Day.
Right.
And the American people decided that it was not an important issue on Election Day. And what Reince did, to go back to the point of your question, is Reince sustained a focus
yeah.
on helping the president get ready for these debates. And what he did, he and Chris Christie and many others of the team, and by the way, no one stepped on that stage but Donald Trump. So it was all him and his preparation. But I give Reince credit for really being a tremendous partner in
that. We see some fractions that have erupted within the Republican Party in the year since that conversation happened. And there is this question of how much the party is going to be redefined by Donald Trump and by his presidency and by his policies.
You know, Donald Trump ran as a change agent.
Yeah.
Donald Trump said Washington is fundamentally broken and the American people. So, and Hillary Clinton said, you're going to get more of the same. The American people chose
but I'm talking about the Republican Party, right?
But he is not a professional career politician. He is a change agent who came to Washington, who was not going to allow what he believed a broken status quo, a broken Washington, to change him. He right. was going, and when you are fighting the establishment, not just the Democrats, but there are some within the party that and the deep state, which is what we call that permanent class, that permanent government class here in Washington. You're going to fight all of that. You're going to get some people, even in your own party, who don't like what you're doing.
I'm just trying to think about, like, here we are in the present moment watching the debate go on about the tax bill, about Dreamers, about the wall, about mm-hmm. funding, all these things. And a larger thought of some people saying, no, this is what the party looks like now, right? And this is what voters responded to, and other people saying, no, we don't want this to be the party. And thinking about how the president, given the kind of campaign that he ran, given that sensibility that you reflect in that moment, which is obviously probably the highest stress couple of minutes of the whole campaign, how that would play out. If Mitch McConnell distances himself from the president, there's a fight between the Republicans about what to do should Roy Moore win the Senate race in Alabama, is the president, how does he navigate his relationship to what the Republican Party is?
Look, the book is about the outsider, right? There were a number of candidates who ran as the insider of the Republican Party, right? That's not what the American people wanted. They wanted change. And what this book talks about is someone who's wholly outside the system, not somebody who grew up as a Republican Party operative, had been elected at multiple levels as a Republican and was beholden to the Republican establishment. We ran the outsiders campaign. And most of the people, the pundits, said we could never be successful because right. we had never run a presidential campaign. The establishment was going to be too bold. What the book talks about is Trump's vision, which is to remake the Republican Party, to start talking about trade, which the Republican Party stopped doing for yep. a long time. The president, candidate Trump, in the book says, let's tell you what my platform is. We're going to put America first. I know this is a crazy idea, but we're going to do it. We're going to make sure we have fair trade deals because we've been bad for so long. We're going to make sure that people know it is the greatest privilege in the world to become a citizen of this great country, so we're going to understand what our immigration system looks like. Okay? That's what the book is about because that's the platform. Now, the Republican Party has embraced it because for the first time since probably Ronald Reagan, because of what Donald Trump did on the campaign, what we talk about in this book, they're talking about trade imbalances again. They're trying to understand, why do we always have bad trade deals?
And if Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump disagree on what the Republican Party is, look, what is only, Donald Trump's look, response
there's,
to
this? There's one person who is the head of the Republican Party, and he's the president of the United States of America, just like Barack Obama for 8 years sure. was the head of the Democratic
well,
Party.
I remember it was around this time last year, Stephen Moore, who was advising your campaign a little bit, The Economist, right? He had a meeting with House Republicans and said in there, this is not the party of Reagan anymore, it's the party of Trump. And a lot of people got very up in arms about it. And I talked to him a couple days after that, and he said, I'm not really sure what the controversial part of that statement is. Donald Trump won. He's the president. He's the head of the party. Just like, as you said, Obama was the head of the Democratic Party. Like it or not, it was Obama's Democratic Party for 8 years.
Well, look, when you become the president of the United States, you are the de facto head of the Republican or Democratic Party.
But because I guess to me, the question ends up being, is Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, committed? Do you think he'll stay a Republican forever?
Okay. I think what he has been elected to do, what we've seen in the book, is you don't have to have been a Republican for 50 years to go and run under the Republican mantle, right? Donald Trump and what we did and how we're a small part of and what this book outlined was we did it from the outside.
Right. And that's why it seems to me like he is more committed to the ideas that he ran on, the ideas that he believes in, the ideas that people connected with, potentially, than to the Republican Party itself.
No, look, I think the president very much respects the Republican Party. He is very engaged with the Republican National Committee, helps them raise a lot of money,
sure.
And understands that having Republicans controlling Congress is a fundamentally different thing than having Democrats. He is going to be able to get more of his legislative agenda done, and the example is the tax cut bill. Every Democrat has said they will not support it. This is a tax cut bill that's providing relief for working families, middle class. The Democrats have just summarily said no. So what Donald Trump did in the campaign is he brought ideas, and what the American people saw, and what we talk about in the book is he could go to a city, a town, a municipality that they said Republicans cannot win, and Donald Trump won.
Right.
He won in Wisconsin. He won in Michigan. He won in Pennsylvania. He won in Iowa, Ohio, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida. He won in places where Republicans don't win anymore.
And we almost won in Minnesota.
And we almost won in New Hampshire.
That's right.
And almost won in Nevada.
Yeah.
And the difference is what the book says is this is what he saw, right? This is what he tapped into. This is what the American people want is something different than the same broken Washington for 30 years.
I think you spend more time in the book talking about how many things Paul Manafort did wrong were then talking about how terrible a candidate Hillary Clinton was. Maybe it's just the focus of the book. But is Paul Manafort, do you think if he hadn't been associated with the campaign, then a lot of the problems that, a lot of the investigations that have come up, obviously, since then would not be. Is he did he bring all this to the campaign in your mind?
Well, first of all, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can say as somebody who's an outsider, I didn't work with him, but from what I see and read is that he was already under investigation prior to the campaign. Maybe him taking that job put him in a spot to...
Yeah, I mean, you sort of lead people up to that suggestion in the book that there was some financial concern.
But clearly, we all now know that the DOJ or FBI, somebody who had been looking at him for a long time before he ever joined the campaign. So that's why we feel very strongly at the campaign that those are his, if he, you know, did anything, and that'll be, you know, that'll come out over the next many months. That's on him. It has nothing to do with the president.
I mean, Corey, you're not a fan of Paul Manafort.
look, here's my take on it. Paul Manafort was brought on board to wrangle delegates at a time that the arcane system of getting delegates, getting to the magic number to secure enough delegates, had not been done since a floor fight in 1976. That's the last time something happened. We went back and tried to find somebody who'd been involved in 1976, and the only guy left was Paul Manafort. That's not much of an exaggeration.
No, we said, I've said on television that Paul Manafort was somebody who hadn't been involved in a campaign since the advent of the fax machine. So, I mean, he hadn't been involved in a lot of races recently.
Yes, but that was not your problem with him. Your problem with him is all the things that he did, you think, wrong as the campaign manager.
To be clear, Paul was never the manager. It's very important. There were only two campaign managers, me and Kellyanne Conway, the only two people who ever were the campaign managers. Yeah. And it's a very important distinction. Paul served as a chairman of the campaign for a brief stint, about 6 weeks, I think, he ended up in that capacity. And what was determined was from the time I left the campaign to the time that Steve Bannon came in, Kellyanne and Dave, what we say in the book was this campaign went from a juggernaut that had destroyed the Republican primary field to decimated. That happened under Paul's leadership. That's just factual. That's in the book, and it's clear, and you can look at the numbers.
And there's some money that you say went missing and the questions that are still there.
Look, again.
Do you think that Paul Manafort stole money from the campaign?
Look, I don't know. I have no idea if Paul Manafort stole money from the campaign. I think he has a whole series of legal problems that are not related to his tenure at this campaign. But if there has been any impropriety during his time at the campaign, I think that'll be investigated as well.
How often do you guys talk to the president still?
Like, I don't like to share private conversations that I have, so I don't want to disclose that, but I can tell you that we have, Dave and I collectively, have a very, very good relationship with the present and the people in the building.
And an ongoing relationship.
An ongoing, yes.
Do you think, Corey, it was all made fresh to me, the whole story of your dismissal from the campaign and Manafort coming into it. It was, as you say, it was Donald Trump Jr. who delivered the news to you. Do you think that the president's children serve him well as advisors?
Oh, look, I can tell you this, and we talk about the importance of family in this book. Donald Trump and his family are incredible people. And when you have people like that around you, they can give you honest advice about things that others just can't do because they have a very special place. And I think what the Trump family has done, we talk about in the book, the surrogate work that Eric and Donnie did on the campaign, which was yeoman's work.
Phenomenal.
Laura Trump, Vanessa, Ivanka, Jared, as a family, they came together, Melania Trump, they came together to support their father in a very difficult endeavor running for president. Okay. They took that same type of bond, which they have a very close bond, the Trump family, and they came to Washington with Ivanka and Jared to make sure that the president is hearing the honest things that he needs to hear. Because sometimes when you're staff, it's much more difficult to do. And I think his family serves him very, very well.
I mean, Jared Kushner has been credited with the urging the president to fire Jim Comey, with urging him to back Luther Strange. Those are among the things. Is that good advice coming from Jared Kushner?
Look, I don't know, to be clear, if those are true or not. I mean, that's what's publicly reported, but I don't know if Jared Kushner ever made those statements to the president. Nobody knows other than Jared Kushner and the president. Yeah. So I don't want to speculate on what Jared has or hasn't said, but what I do think is very, very important is the role that they have, that Jared and Ivanka play in that White House, is of a staff person. And they serve the president to the best of their ability. Jared is working.
They're providing good advice.
They are trying. Look, it is a very difficult job in that building. And nobody can bat 100, 1,000, right? It's just very hard. What they're doing is what every staff person is doing there, is they're working to the best of their ability to serve this president.
And you're around him, talking to him, around the other people there. There have been some reports in the last couple of days and weeks about the president doubting the Access Hollywood tape. In the book, there's when the tape comes out, the president, you have him saying, that doesn't sound like me, which is similar to what it sounds like he's been saying more recently. Does he believe that the Access Hollywood tape was him?
Look, I think that's for the president to decide, but what's the most important thing?
But didn't he say it was him?
I don't know what he said, honestly. But
he did a whole video message.
Here's what I know.
He apologized for it.
Here's what I know. The American people looked at this.
They
had a month
litigated.
To litigate it and decided that regardless of what may or may not have been said, they wanted Donald Trump as their president of the United States. And I think, you know, we could always go back and look back and say, what do we do right? What do we do wrong? The American people have looked at this and said, we don't care to a point what was on that tape. And what the president said was...
Well, but it's a different issue, right? Of whether people waited as a dispositive reason to vote for him than whether there's something that he said was him and that everybody seems to see no reason to doubt was him is now being doubted by him.
Look, I don't know that. Look, that's a question for the president. I can tell you that... You know, we had the opportunity, the American people had the opportunity to look at this, to listen to what candidate Trump said. You have to remember, that tape came out 2 days before a massive debate.
Okay? Oh, I
remember. Not by accident, by the way. Okay, this wasn't like an accident that we didn't know the debate was coming out on a Sunday, right? And what happened was candidate Trump got up there at a debate stage and completely decimated Hillary Clinton. And the American people looked at that. And they stopped talking about a tape from 10 years ago, and they started talking about the fact that the country needs to do better.
Does he think Barack Obama was born in the U.S.?
I think he's been very clear. He's come out publicly and said, and I think you might have covered his press conference at the hotel with a series of veterans,
but
and he said Barack Obama.
Since.
I've never heard him doubt it since. I've heard him say on the record in a news conference, the president has said Barack Obama was born in Hawaii.
What do you make of, I mean, there's this sort of narrative that seems to be out there and based on things like this, that people are saying, oh, he's like delusional, he's lost it. What do you make when you hear that?
It's frustrating. I'd say for me, Corey, I don't know about you, but it's a frustrating thing. He wakes up every day. First of all, he's the hardest working person that I've ever met, man or woman. He's a virtual machine. He wakes up in the morning and he works all day and night for the American people. He is trying. If the Democrats would simply stop with their hate, they are so destructive over this past 10, 11 months, year and a half, I'll give them the last 6 months of the campaign even. The Democrats cannot for a moment get themselves to work with him. Their visceral hatred of this man, of the president, is detrimental to the American people. It's detrimental to what we want as a country to be able to move forward. And I personally have never seen anything like this. The level of anxiety, the level of...
You didn't see it. I mean, it does seem to mirror what happened with Obama and a lot of Republicans, though.
Not even close. Not even a scintilla of evidence is there to show. Look, we as the Republican, opposed the president on policy issues. There was never a takedown like this of Barack Obama. The Republicans fought the president on ideas. The Republicans are good at coming up with policy ideas, concrete policy initiatives. And so when the president would bring forth whatever, you know, liberal policy, it would be met with another policy. This is different. This is a no. This is a hard and fast, we are not doing anything that you want to do. And that's a different thing. In American politics, no matter how much you agree or disagree with somebody, you try to work to find some common ground. Barack Obama made deals throughout his 8 years, with Paul Ryan, with John Boehner, with Mitch McConnell, what have you. I mean, there were deals to be made.
A few, but they
helped America move along. Here, I see what the Democrats have done, and I shudder because I think it changes the way we can conduct ourselves in the future. That the riots in the streets,
riots?
You see that during the campaign in Chicago, right. I would call that a riot.
Yes.
Okay. During the transition, there were
protests. I mean, I know there were riots.
Well, there were a lot of violence at them. So when I term it a riot when you have violence and arrests by the police. I mean, so we'll term it, rallies or protests, I guess. But we didn't do that to Barack Obama. When he was elected president of the United States, there weren't protests in the streets. I don't remember being
there
in the
not,
street.
There were not there protests.
There were not protests in the streets.
There were definitely protests.
It has changed the way...
I don't think that there's a question about that, that this presidency is changing politics. We don't have a huge amount more time, so I want to... there's a question that I was thinking about this. You guys, both in the book, elsewhere, have talked about the fake news and the media. Here we are. I work for Politico. You guys wanted to do this interview. Why are you doing an interview with and you're going to do other interviews with the book tour. Why engage with news outlets?
Well,
if you feel like that there is that problem throughout the media.
You know, I was taught early on in my career that if you can eat up column inches with your quotes and with your part of the story, they can only lie about you so much. And so we engage every day. We participate, both of us, with print media outlets, with radio, with television, right. And we try to make sure that the good news, the good news message of President Trump is told to the American people, even if it's in bite-sized pieces, small, medium, mm-hmm. large doses. We have to fight inside of the arena. We can't go and take our marbles and go somewhere else. We are in a position where the only way the American people are going to be educated is if people like us stand up and say that the conservative movement, the Trump movement that won one year ago, is alive and well, and that we are going to continue to build on this, and hopefully with tax reform is the beginning of a legislative agenda that will get this president, you know, many more victories to come.
What should we do next? Infrastructure?
I've
been hearing about infrastructure for a long time.
Well, we have, there's a lot of issues that need to be tackled, in America. But I think, obviously we have spending, and budget issues, coming right around the corner.
Is the president frustrated by the resistance that he has felt, that he has met with this, it seems like he, based on his comments, based on his tweets, it seems like he's frustrated with the Democrats. He feels like they are more resistant to him than he was anticipating. That the media coverage that he's been getting is not what he was expecting.
Look, I think what the president wants to do, because he's a businessman at heart, and he brings that mindset to the Oval Office, is he wants to accomplish things. And Congress moves so slowly.
Right. Let's just finish up with a little word association here. I'm going to read you a list of names. You tell me what you think. One word or two. Ready?
We're ready.
This is after having read the book. Sam Nunberg. The smile is creeping onto your face, Corey.
Oh, I don't know.
Jump in.
I like Sam. I like Sam. Sam's a good guy. And Sam worked hard for the president and during early on in the campaign.
Yeah. Sam's better in the role now than he was in the campaign.
I mean, you're pretty negative on him in the book.
Oh, no. That book, and I think you guys know me, I think what Dave and I do in that book is we provide an honest assessment. That's what this book is about. This is a book about, honestly, what took place in the campaign. This isn't the book that some people thought it was going to be. It's an honest assessment of what that campaign was like. And when you are working in a campaign environment like we did on that campaign, there are personality conflicts all the time. We talk about that in the book.
I mean, you basically call him incompetent in the book.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. And look, there was a time prior to me coming to the Trump organization that Sam was the person helping Donald Trump.
And he was
be
it.
That person.
I give credit. I mean, in my part where I talk about Sam, I mean, which we didn't dwell on, but I say that he was a key instrument early on in this campaign, and he helped, with some structure and organization when it was just him and Mr. Trump and then candidate Trump. So, I mean, it was he had a heavy lift. And unfortunately, as the thing grew, as Corey took over, things change. And that's just life.
All right. Let's try to get back to one word or phrase here. Roger Stone. You got nothing, Corey?
I got no words.
No words. Hope Hicks.
Capable.
Tremendous.
Sean Spicer.
Very, very capable.
Good operative.
Pretty negative on him in the book, too.
No, again.
For not being loyal.
No, you got to remember, the book talks about the truth, which was and has been widely talked about during this administration, and it manifested and started in the campaign, which is what the book is about. There are two different groups of people, those that were there and loyal at the very beginning. And it's a small group and it grew, right? Other people came on and they were loyal. That wasn't the role that the RNC was supposed to play. They came in
very
to have a different
thing.
Role. Yeah. And people
Well, but
perceive
I mean, in the book
that.
You talk about Sean, you say he, I don't, maybe both of you knew it, that he was looking for television contracts. And you say that's true. It's not negative.
It's not negative.
It's a factual thing. And Sean had a different role. He was the RNC.
Right.
spokesman and strategist. And when things were, you know, complicated, he had a role and he was looking at the world view of somebody from the RNC. And we didn't begrudge him that. We understood it.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean we're being negative about Sean. We both worked with Sean. I've known Sean a long time. I like Sean. I think he's an incredibly capable person. So I'm sorry you took that away.
Ryan Priebus?
Courageous.
Strong party chairman.
Jared Kushner.
Wicked smart.
Very smart and capable.
Dan Scavino.
Exceptionally loyal.
Awesome guy.
Donald Trump Jr.
Great to work with.
We have all the same adjectives because we like all of these people for the most part.
Well, I'm going to give you one that I feel like you won't give me a positive adjective for. Paul Manafort.
Bad guy.
Same.
Chris Christie.
Love him.
I love the guy.
Anthony Scaramucci.
Mooch.
The Mooch. He's an amazing character.
Yes. Vibrant.
Exceptionally mediocre. He'll love that.
We'll finish off. Steve Bannon.
Very smart.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, it's really, it's Paul Manafort is the...
You miss Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah. What's about Kelly? What are you?
Kellyanne Conway. Sorry.
The perfect person to do the job she did.
Outstanding, brilliant, and incredibly capable.
So now you've added her to the list, but it remains true. Paul Manafort is the he's the bad guy. He's the problem.
Look, he was the problem, and if you look at that tenure of the campaign, the book talks about it. That Paul was there. It was a very short amount of time.
But that's more than just being a bad chairman.
Look, being a bad chairman is one thing. Okay. Paul's a bad person. Okay, I know good people who do bad things. I know bad people who do good things.
Do you hope he goes to jail?
I don't want anybody to go to jail because I can only imagine what the impact that would be on not just him, but his entire family, his kids, and
nobody
I would never want that for anybody. But if you broke the law, there are consequences.
Yeah.
And the charges that are against him stem from his tenure 10 years ago of not doing things properly. And there is accountability for that.
All right. I'm going to let you guys go.
Thank you very much. This was great.
Corey Lewandowski and David Bossie. Thank you for taking
the time. Let Trump be
Trump. Yeah.
That was David Bossie and Corey Lewandowski. Thanks as always to Zach Stanton for producing and Eliana Johnson for joining us earlier. Have you hit that subscribe button yet? Do it and email a friend and tell them to do it too. You don't want to miss one of the episodes coming up. David Petraeus. Many more. And catch you next time on Off Message.